Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and we're getting an update today on Arizona Sonoran Copper, traded on the TSX under the ticker ASCU, and on the OTCQX under the ticker ASCUF. And we're speaking today with the president and CEO, George Ogilvy. And George, it's great to have you on the show to get an update on the Cactus Project in Arizona, working on copper, doing a lot of different work. And honestly, there's been so much news out this year. I think it'd be important just to start with the big update that you had to the market, your economic study, the pre-feasibility study that came out in February. Give us the key metrics and the key takeaways on the Cactus Project as it stands on the part that you have released the economic study on so far.
Yeah, well, thank you, Shad. Well, we put our pre-feasibility study out in February. We ran the model at a $3.90 flat copper price, and it gave us an NPV8 after tax of $509 million, and the IRR after tax was 15%. And over the course of a 21-year mine life, we actually produce 55,000 tons of cathode per annum on average, with approximately 2.3 billion pounds of copper produced over that 21-year period. The mine throws off approximately $2.5 billion in free cash flow. And the capital intensity, which is the capex required per tonne of cathode produced, was sitting around $10,343 a tonne, which actually puts us in the lowest quartile as far as capital intensity is concerned, which is, you know, related to execution risk on the project. So overall, it was a major step up from a PEA that was out of date and was approximately 3 years old.
Well, and I think you have some information on here on sensitivities to even higher copper prices, because obviously with copper prices trekking higher, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If we look at the metrics at $4.50 a pound of copper, and as we speak here this morning, copper is playing around with $4.90, but at $4.50 a pound of copper, we're looking at an NPV8 after tax of $970 million. The IRR after tax is 22%, and we throw off about $3.5 billion in free cash flow over that 21-year mine life. So a significant uplift at $4.50.
Yeah, for sure. And the way copper's going, it may just keep on trekking, but that'll just be icing on the cake for you guys as far as the copper price. Now, when you have put out this economic study, just remind people, George, that you're also still working on getting Mainspring into the fold here. That's going to be coming up in an upcoming PEA. So this isn't over everything that you've got yet. And so maybe just speak to how this is going to be a multi-phase economic process where you're going to have other economic studies to release.
Yeah, exactly, Shad. I mean, this really is just a stepping stone for us, this PFS. Since putting that out, we started drilling on the Mainspring property in December of last year. It appears to be the southern extension of Park Salier. And as with the mineralization moves south, it appears to actually come towards surface. So I think we've drilled holes 900 meters south of Park Salier and encountered mineralization within 42 meters of surface. So we're in the process now of conducting a preliminary economic assessment. Mainspring has been drilled out to an inferred resource, allowing it to be included in this PEA. And on top of that standalone plan, inclusive of Mainspring, in the summer of this year, we'll also integrate the Newton technology, which looks at the leaching of the primary sulfide. And you may remember here, a global resource currently is 7.4 billion pounds of copper in all resource classifications and all mineralized styles. But there's approximately 1.6 billion pounds of that copper, which is chalcopyrite or primary sulfide. And that's really where the leaching technology through Newton might be able to access some of that stranded resource and provide us with further value addition and accretion.
Yeah, George, I know we have talked about that Newton technology that Rio Tinto has introduced as an option on this before. So basically, you're running the economic study with and without it. You're showing that it's a robust project standalone, but if you add in the Newton technology, maybe just explain to people why that, you know, you kind of just alluded to it there with some of those stranded sulfides coming in, but how could that also be applied to the project overall? Because it also could be applied to mainspring, I guess?
Yes, exactly. Mineralization at mainspring is showing that there is leachable oxide and secondary sulfide there, but there's also some significant primary sulfide. So all of our deposits, really except the historical surface stockpile, exhibit primary sulfide. And I would expect with a mineral resource estimate update coming out ahead of the PEA, we're likely to see the global resource significantly increase, including the primary sulfide over and above the 1.6 billion pounds that we're currently reporting.
Well, and since we're talking about mainspring, let's also just talk about, you just had some recent drill results out last month that were quite impressive. 1,206 feet, 368 meters of 0.5% copper. So just some nice hits there. Maybe speak to us about the drilling you did at mainspring.
Yeah, so in totality for the inferred internal resource, we had drilled ourselves 38 holes. We were given 22 holes by our neighbors to the south who had drilled there a couple of years ago, so we can include those in the modeling. And with approximately 55 holes, I think, drilled today, we are preparing an internal model. And our goal is to try and see if we can actually mine mainspring initially in the south as a starter open pit. As we advance to the north, the mineralization gradually gets a little deeper, but we have seen continuity that would take us right into Park Salyer. So if we can mine profitably all the way with an open pit into Park Salyer and then access Park Salyer from the bottom of the mainspring pit, that's going to significantly reduce the amount of capital required that was showing in that PFS. And obviously, an open pit scenario is a lot less riskier from an execution perspective than, you know, going immediately into underground mining. So I think it has some significant potential benefits for the project overall.
Yeah, George, we had actually just met in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks back at the Energy Transition Metals Conference, and we were talking about this idea. I think this is quite significant, so maybe we'll spend one more minute here. The idea of going underground at Park Salyer is already attractive, but if you can do the open pit and kind of drift into it and come into it, would it just become basically open pit at mainspring and then underground at Park Salyer, where you've already gotten the pit down so far that you've saved yourself all of that pre-strip and all of that work because you're already down at the bottom of the pit and could go underground? Or how do you envision that happening?
Yeah, that's part of it, Chad. In the PFS, there was $107 million of capital development over an 18-year period coming in from surface with twin declines into the top of Park Salyer, opening up the first couple of levels before we start the sub-level cave. Now, if you were able to mine all the way down there with an open pit at mainspring, you know, the decline out of the bottom of that open pit into Park Salyer would be significantly less. And I think there'd be a huge saving on the $107 million that is currently showing within that PFS. Of course, there is another potential option that we will explore. But if you have mined profitably as an open pit all the way down to Park Salyer, could you, in theory, continue mining Park Salyer itself as an open pit? Obviously, you'd have to take a close look at the stripping ratio, given that you're, you know, getting 300, 400, 500 meters underground. But open pit mining is generally around $3 a ton. That would compare with the underground mining cost and the PFS for around $22 a ton. And there's currently $700 million of sustaining capital in the underground workings at Park Salyer as an underground sub-level cave mine. You will obviously need sustaining capital in an open pit as well, but you're not putting in the raises, the vent system, the ore pass, the ground support, the haulage drifts. So maybe there's a saving there on sustaining capital as an open pit. And at the end of the day, the economics might work. So that's something that we're going to explore within this PEA.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting PEA because you got some options there, George. You got some different ways to approach this project. And then Just recently in March, you also picked up some additional land around Mainspring and around this area that's going to be important for the development of the project. Maybe just speak to us about that land you picked up and how you envision it being used.
Yeah, so we picked up what we call Section 1. That was from the Arizona State Lands Department. We have what's known as a special land use permit there. So that gives us access to the surface rights, and that's heading out to the southeast. We had another claim out there that was a little bit of an orphan block, meaning that it wasn't connected contiguously to any other claims on the project. We've now infilled that, and therefore it gives us access to that land. As far as Mainspring itself is concerned, in late February of this year, we made a $5 million payment to the private landowner. And in essence, that now gives us legal title to the Mainspring property, both the surface and the mineral rights. So we're in great shape. We've now got close to 5,800 acres of land, which is all private land. And we have more than enough land for all of our current business needs.
Well, and since it's private land, that kind of gives you an ace in the hole as far as the permitting process. A lot of people right now, George, are worried about any project getting permitted, especially in development. Maybe just speak to us about the permitting landscape there and why it's important to have that private land.
Well, the private land essentially means that there's no federal nexus. So when it comes to permitting, we only deal with the state regulators, the county of Pinal County, and the local municipality of Casa Grande. So with no federal nexus, once we make an application for a permit and the permit is then administratively accepted, within 6 months, the regulators must give us a response to our permit. And what we've seen in the 4 years, that we've been working on this project, the longest that we've had to wait for any permit has been the amended aquifer protection permit, which essentially took 5 months. So the Cactus Project today, excluding Park Salyer and soon to exclude Mainspring, is currently fully permitted. So that would be the surface stockpile, the Cactus West open pit, which was the old Sacaton mine that ASARCO mined here in the 70s and 80s, and adjacent to that, Cactus East Underground. Those are all fully permitted today as per that PEA that was put out 3 years ago, but obviously that's now redundant. So we are in the process now of putting the applications in for an amendment to the aquifer protection permit, the industrial air permit, for example. And we would expect that we would have those amended permits in hand as per this PFS sometime in the third to fourth quarter of this year.
All right, George. And then kind of tying this all together, as you mentioned there, you have Cactus West, you've got Cactus East, you've got Park Salyer, you've got Mainspring. When we first started talking to you, you didn't even have that much on the go. So now you got a lot going on this project. Maybe tie it together as far as how you envision the rest of the year going as far as the news flow and other key catalysts, or even going into next year, things that you want investors to keep their eyes out for.
Yeah, so look, I think the preliminary economic assessment that'll come out sometime in the next couple of months is going to be important. That's going to give the market the first look at Mainspring and how that impacts the standalone business case. And then on top of that, we're going to layer in the Nuton technology with access to the primary sulfides. And that'll also then give the market a look at how much value add and accretion can that actually bring to the table. Beyond the PEA, we then move into a pre-feasibility study that I would expect would come out early in 2025. And assuming the economics look robust enough there, we then move into definitive feasibility study for the summer of 2025. And of course, we continue to drill at site. One of our drills is focused in on the infill drilling at Mainspring to move that up into the indicated resource ahead of that PFS in early 2025. And we currently have a couple of drills at Cactus West, which are drilling specifically for more primary sulfide. And I think in the next couple of weeks, you'll see drill results for the indicated drilling at Mainspring and some preliminary results coming out on the primary sulfide drilling that's taking place at Cactus West. And Shad, it really is a case of everywhere we put the drill bit into the ground, we continue to find more copper mineralization. And of course, this is at a time where there's going to be exponential demand for copper in the US, and we think our timing on this is going to be extremely significant.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here as far as the drilling, updating categories, economic studies, a lot on the go with Arizona Sonoran. And so we'll definitely keep following along here at the KE Report. And if people listening in want to follow along with the news, definitely click on the link below this interview. It takes you over to the company website directly to their news section. And George, keep us abreast of more news as it hits the wires. We'll get you back on for an update and looking forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely, Shad. Thank you for the opportunity.